somebody to say things out loud to, but God.
Yeah. Guns was in here once. Gives a shit?
What? Do I give a shit?
Yes.
Do you really want my opinion? I will say this. You know, it's sad to see someone go, and he did a lot for the I'm not a big Apple fan, but...
We didn't know that.
We didn't know that. He did a lot of stuff for... And I can get behind that. I don't have this... Oh, man, this is the most depressing thing that's ever happened. But it is sad to see him go, and he did a lot, so I can give him props where props are due.
Fair enough.
I mean, this... I'm not so broken up about it that, you know, I'm going to go and drink myself into oblivion or anything like that, but... This is sad, man. I grew up using Apple computers. It wasn't until later in life when I learned how to build my own computer that I kind of branched away. But as much as I hated the arrogance that came recently from the quote-unquote Apple people, I was always impressed at what Apple was able to do, because like I said in my little snippet, most of the stuff that we enjoy today wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for Steve Jobs's arrogance and drive to do what he did.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, you're lying to yourself if you pretend that Steve Jobs didn't have an influence in your life, and I mean, I wouldn't know you guys. Like, this show doesn't exist without Apple. I mean, nothing we do that we've built or really have, I wouldn't even have this, be interested in this kind of work. I wouldn't know half the people I know in real life now if it weren't for Apple and like their drive to make computers accessible. I mean, forget the iPhone and the iPod, like just technology in general is what it is in no small part thanks to Steve Jobs.
I think that when people say that they're sad about Jobs passing away and they're broken up about his death, I mean, it's not that they're, you know, broken up because they personally knew the guy. It's they're broken up because something, the thing that is gone is the things Steve stood for, the ideas, what he represented in society and in an industry. That is what's gone. That's what connects.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not one of the people who's real, oh, this is the technology has changed forever, and I'm sad he's gone, and what, I'm not that person. To be frank, I'm kind of tired of my Facebook ever blowing up. I already know. I mean, that's just the kind of person I am. Let's move on. But you got to give props where props are due, and he did a ton to push the tech industry forward. And we wouldn't have a lot of the stuff we have now if it weren't for him.
Agreed.
And yeah, I'm kind of the dickhead in the group because I don't really care one way or the other. But hey, you gotta respect.
At least you're being respectful, man. Like I'm. You don't have to have the same emotions everybody has.
Yeah, and you know I get where people are coming from, and you know I can respect what he did, and so he's got my respect.
You know, when I first saw it, I was like, what? That's not possible. It's April Fool's or something. No, it's fucking October. What's going on here? And then it kind of hit me a little bit. I was like, okay, well, this kind of sucks. Well, I can't let this go. I got to write something. And then as I started writing, I am not ashamed to admit that tears filled up my eyes and made it very, very difficult to write what I was writing.
Because it was unexpected.
Which says something for somebody that talks as much shit about Apple as I do.
Right, and when I always thought about, you know, it was inevitable. We all knew, like you said, this was going to happen. Everybody was conscious of it. With Steve giving up the CEO position, that was, you know, the obvious tipping point. I guess I never knew how I would feel when the news came out. It's like I never really considered it. And I never considered that it would, when I would see that thing on the Apple website, it would affect me in a way where I would just feel empty, absolute empty. And I never knew that that Steve could actually have that such of an impact on me without me ever having met him.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, it was just it was a feeling like losing a relative, and this is for a person I've never met, I've never spoken to. I know nothing about other than what he's built with his company. And it's just weird to feel that way over something I'm quite honestly very detached from.
But even along with that, I would wager that he's had as much, if not more, of an impact on your life than most of your family has.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, setting aside the technology part of my life where, you know, as we all know, I use almost exclusively Apple products. There's, you know, my personal life, his vision and his ambitions in his life and his drive to just constantly pursue his dreams and, you know, innovate in all the ways that he had imagined are inspirational. They're something that have led me to be where I am, the way I feel about business, the way I feel about the world around me. You know, I could only hope to be, you know, half as influential as he was in my life, you know, and I'm sure I won't be, you know, it's a rare thing to come by and I'm not sure I'm cut out for it, but, you know, he really, you know, he left his mark on me in my personal life as well. And it's really tough to see that go.
You know, I have to say, you know, my background is considerably different from the rest of you guys. You know, I'm a geek to the core, but I came to this late. I grew up in a place where, and you may not believe this now, and everyone may want to act different, but there are entire corners of this world that have no idea and don't care. And I was brought up in one of those places. You know, and even when I did finally enter this world, it was through, you know, Windows, Linux, and all this other stuff. Heck, my first real smartphone, because I don't consider the Samsung Jack smartphone, was a Windows Phone 7 device. My only Apple product, the only two Apple products I ever got were kind of like hand-me-downs from people I didn't even care about. So as far as connection to Apple, I'm as far removed, you know, as can be. But the thing that Steve Jobs, you know, left, created, that makes him valuable to me, Apple itself means nothing to me. The iPhone, the iPod, these little revolutions are petty and insignificant to me. You know, I've said it lots of times. We always act like all this stuff is so huge, and it isn't. It's a blink of an eye. The thing that the mark he made that matters to me is that he set a standard. Like, he had this persistence of vision. And don't get me wrong, you know, I know people in my life who will say, well, you know, there are average Joes all over the place who are doing the same thing. They have a persistence of vision. They're just not as big as him. And they're right. But that's kind of the point. Isn't it? Like, isn't that kind of what makes someone, you know, the best of what we have to offer? You know, when you take that, when you take your ultimate person, you know, the person who is the best they can be in whatever they're doing, and you take those qualities, isn't that exactly kind of what you see in Steve Jobs? He just kind of, he came on the scene, he was dragged the mud a couple of times. I mean, like I was saying earlier, you know, the man has lived multiple lives. He's resurrected himself multiple times, but even he only died once. And that's fucking amazing. You know, the guy is a standard. He set a bar. And the rest of us, and it's not the kind of bar that you have to either try to go over or under. It's just, it's it's a bar to kind of live up to. I don't know if that makes sense. You know, like he made a model, a blueprint. That's the word I'm looking for.
He, in a lot of ways, what he did, the way I see it, is he took what everybody else was doing, and he said, "This isn't quite good enough. I don't like what this is as it is. Here's something better." And then when everybody else saw that, they kind of kicked themselves in the ass, and they were like, "You know what? He's right. We were treading water. We were bullshitting for far too long, and he raised the standard so that people that, I mean, even today, people get compared to the iPhone, the iPad, you know, and for good reason, because they were the first, and in a lot of ways, they're still the best. iPhone isn't still the best. It's damn good. But the iPad, I mean, it's going to be a tough cookie to beat. Because of Steve.
And that's exactly what I mean by his persistence of vision. You know, everyone is looking in one direction saying, you know, hey, look, you know, that's red. And Steve Jobs steps into the room and says, no, that's green. And even if the entire world kept saying that's red, he just kept saying that's green, that's green. And eventually everyone was like, oh, shit, that is green. You know, like, there's this kind of persistence no matter what we keep saying. Like, how many times – I mean, you guys know this. I mean, we know this probably more than you know, the average layman out there. But every year – and I actually just said this yesterday as I was, you know, arguing, strangely enough, in favor of Apple's new, you know, the 4S, that people are complaining that, you know, oh, incremental change, like, it's the same thing every year. And every year people are initially disappointed, but every year they're right. Every single time, it's the same crap. Oh, no, it should have been this. Oh, they're so buried. They're over. Blah, blah, blah. But every time, consistently, except with Apple TV, that was an unfortunate mistake.
He was still wrong about Flag.
I don't know. I mean, you know, that's one of those things. You know what?
Look, history might eventually prove that he was right about Flash, but right now... yes, I will concede that he has consistently took the haters and fed him a bowl of shut the fuck up.
Well, he's consistent as you can be, because nobody bats a thousand.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you know what you need to be considered? In order to be considered a prophet, you need to be right 52% of the time. The man has like a 90% success rate. At this point, he's practically godlike.
And that's the most remarkable part to me, because, like you said, the persistence of vision. Anybody could have a vision and endlessly pursue it, but that doesn't necessarily make it right. You know, I could sit here and tell you that the sky is red all day long, but at the end of the day, we're all going to know that it's blue. But to be able to pursue that vision endlessly and in the end prove everybody wrong time and time again with, you know, with product after product, it's pretty remarkable and extremely rare to come by, and I don't know if we'll ever see that kind of an innovator again.
You know, I don't think there's another company on the planet right now with so few missteps as what Apple has had since Steve Jobs took over again. Correct me if I'm wrong, but...
Oh. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, that's the thing. And, you know, again, back to the whole, you know, persistence of vision thing, you know, he had ideas, a vision, like, back in the 80s that didn't come to life, that pretty much got stomped out. And whereas other people would say, I was wrong, let me redesign, he was like, no, the time wasn't ready yet. And then he came back with it again in 2000, and it's like, okay, now the technology's caught up. You know, now we have the vision. It's almost as if he woke up in the morning and said, hey, so I kind of didn't like your rules, so I made my own. You know,
well,
is that cool?
I think
that's
what really made him stand out as a CEO in the tech industry, is he had these ideas, and no matter what, he was going through these ideas.
Oh, yeah.
May not have happened right away, but he was going to stick with it, and it was going to come to fruition.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really made him stand out, is if the market didn't like it, he was like, well, we'll just wait a little bit, and it will happen. And I know this idea is great. I'm not going to give up on it.
I think one of the most flattering things about consistently happens with Apple products is that everything else that comes after it, called the iPod killer, the iPad killer, the iPhone killer, and to be able to be, you know, to be able to have your products want to be taken off the throne by everyone else rather than setting the, you know, rather than trying to play catch up, I guess. It's really, it just speaks to his, you know, vision and his drive and all of the innovations that he had done and his company, of course.
Yeah, he really set a bar for what he wanted to do, and people are like, well, that's a good idea. And everyone wanted to make their own. But he, time after time, set the bar.
Yeah. And you know what? And this goes back to what I was trying to communicate initially. Like, I still barely give a damn about Apple. Like, I mean, I have my a nuanced opinion. It's not like a hatred of Apple or anything like that. I'm not going to go out and buy Apple products, even though I do, well, and I have been long before this happened, looking for a first-generation iPod just to kind of mark, you know, this is when the future started. You know, like, imagine showing your kids that first iPod and it's like, you know, bug is that? And you're like, this.
You want your own tech time capsule, is that what you're saying?
Good luck getting one now.
Oh, yeah. No, I actually have one in storage. Like, I got my hands on one. And so it's just one of those things where now all of a sudden, like, it's been sitting in storage, and I just thought to my, you know, and I was like, I'll get to it eventually. But all of a sudden, I now feel like I'm paranoid, like someone's going to break in and take it. You know? But it's like, you know, I feel like that, you know, this is when the future started. But, you know, like I said, I don't, like, as far as Apple products, the company, I mean, it's a brand, you know, like I'm no more attached to it than I am to Windows or Linux or Disney or Coca-Cola or Nike or anything like that. But when I found out that Steve Jobs was dead, my reaction, it wasn't a kick to the gut. There was no sadness, no epic sense of the world ending, nothing like that. It was just a simple, I looked around my bedroom and realized how incredibly small and tiny and non-impactful my life has been so far. Like, sense of smallness. And then this tiny dot of light in my brain said, I can be better. Like, you know, it was like this weird realization that I'm small, but I can be bigger. And that, to me, that's a powerful feeling. You know, and again, I hate to go back to the whole, you know, almost religious thing. I know that we joke around with the cult of Mac, but at the end of the day, this is the very effect that religions have on people. It's that, you know, epiphany, that kind of beautification that happens where you realize, you know, there's always this thing in you that says, shit, I can be better. To me, a legend who is great that you can never emulate is useless to me. You know, but a legend out there who, like, I feel I could be, even if rationally speaking, statistically speaking, I can't be, but I feel is within, you know, within my realm. That's a far more useful, you know, useful thing to me. It's like, I remember someone saying years ago, telling me, a friend of mine, deeply religious guy, he said, you know, I've always respected Moses more than Jesus because, you know, I feel like I can, you know, lead my people out of Egypt, but I'll never be able to walk on water. And that's kind of the effect that, you know, that Steve Jobs has on me. This idea that he set the path and, you know, made me believe that I can come from nothing and be better. I mean, fuck's sake. Looking at my life, I grew up with more options than he did. And look what he's achieved. You know, it's just to me, it's a wonderful feeling. You know, he's not just some guy. He's the blueprint.
I really like that. I mean, like you were saying, like he had nothing. Like I was looking up his Wikipedia, his backstory after he died, and like he dropped out of college after one semester. Like I've had more proper college experience than he did, and I have a shitty college history. So, like that's something that gets under your skin when you're thinking, oh, my life is shit. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. Like. There you go. This guy died literally on top of the world. Like, as the CEO of the most successful company in the middle of a recession, with the largest market capitalization in the world, in an industry that has reached into the fabric of every single person on Earth's lives in the course of, like, 30 or 40 years. I mean, Apple was founded in, what, the 70s or the 80s?
Yeah, 70s.
Yeah, I mean, we... Normally, you don't hear about companies that have had that much of an effect unless they were started when your grandparents were kids. I mean, IBM and Nintendo and a whole bunch of other giant corporations started in, like, the 1800s. Apple was started shortly before we were born, or maybe shortly after, depending on the age. You know... There's nothing to say that any of us right here couldn't go out and effect change for everyone on the planet. If he could do it, we could. You know.
Yeah.
We don't have the drive that Steve Jobs had. I mean, we could definitely push ourselves. It's not saying that we're incapable, but I just don't think that the stars have ever or will ever align like that again for in such a perfect way to create a person with the dedication to duty that Steve Jobs has. I mean, that man, he bordered on crazy, and he kind of laughed at everybody.
Yeah, and it wasn't just like dedication to duty. It was this understanding of how the world worked. Like, I remember seeing demos of these multi-touch panels, like demoed at TED in 2005. And I thought, wow, that's really awesome. I'd love to have that in a computer. And after the iPhone comes out, you know, and it had the exact same pinch to zoom gestures and everything, you know, Apple looked at that and thought, I know exactly what this needs to be in. And the iPhone was revolutionary, not just because it had a touchscreen or because it had apps, but it was this culmination of so many technologies in one device. It was a GPS. It was aware of its position in space. It was aware of its like rotation, and it had, you know, all kinds of sensors in it, and they came together in this package that made sense in the way that people needed it to make sense. It wasn't a, here's the tools, now you figure out how to use it. You know, that's not something that just comes from, hey, I've got a cool idea. That is understanding, like, the human mind, understanding how people interact with each other, understanding society as a whole. You know, you almost get the impression that if you spent a year with him, like, he'd know you. He wouldn't just be some guy that you interact with. He would be someone who understood. And that's the bulk of his vision, is looking at the world around him and understanding it in a way that few people do, which is why he seems so crazy in the best way.
And, you know, there will be people who rightfully, you know, make the point that there is a huge amount of this is luck. I mean, for every him, for every Bill Gates, for every Michael Dell, there are thousands, tens of thousands of failures. I mean, probably Mark Zuckerberg is the better example. For every him, like, there's a new social network every week that fails within the next month, a few months, you know, and it's like, yes, there is luck, you know, no one's denying that. And, but this is no reason to avoid aspiring for the same kind of thing. Like, you know, like Vito said, you know, there's that intensity, that, you know, dedication to his work, and chances are there are some of us who can never generate that amount of energy. But it's not so much the actual generation of the energy as it is the effort. Like, I mean, imagine if everyone you knew, every single person, each one of us on the Noisecast, everyone on this planet at least tried. Never mind being successful at it, but at least tried to generate that kind of passion and energy for whatever they're doing. I mean, whether it's, you know, waking up in the morning and making yourself tea in the best fucking way you can, or, you know, like whatever, just, can you imagine just the kind of amazing things that would begin to happen if we didn't just go through our lives just half-assing it because, you know, being satisfied with things the way they are because, you know, without asking why and trying to figure out things and like you said, you know, trying to know the people around us to understand how it ticks and make it better. Like, you know, that to me is, it's the enduring lesson, not his success, not the success of Apple, not the fact that he's great, because you know what? Guess what? If he never existed, someone else would be number one right now that everyone would remember. I mean, I refuse to believe that there could never have been a Steve and there never will be another. I refuse to believe that. But, you know, aspiring for that kind of thing, like, there's that's the most important lesson here. You know, just put some of that energy into it. Just try. Whatever the fuck you're doing right now, tomorrow morning, you wake up in the morning, whatever you're doing, going to class, going to work, whatever, try for one day to throw as much passion into it as he does and see what happens, failure or not.
I'm not going to lie. I actually got goosebumps while you were saying that, because you're right. That's the lesson. That is what Steve Jobs, like, I love the computers and the phones and all that stuff, but you're right. It's the putting everything you have into something you love, and you know he loved that company. You know he loved doing what he was doing. I mean, he didn't step down until just a few months before he died, and I'm pretty sure he knew. Pretty sure he knew that was coming, and he made sure that to the last breath he could, he gave that company everything he had. And he wanted to be the best. He was not satisfied with mediocrity. And I think that you're right. If we put that kind of effort into whatever it is we're doing, like, amazing things happen. That's, I hate to be cheesy. I really hate to use a played out term, but that's the real magic of Apple. It's not slick animations or cool syncs between devices. It's that passion physically manifest for something that you love, like in your hands. And you're right, we could all do that. May not all have the success that he has, but we could all have that passion.
Something you said, what was it? He wasn't satisfied with being good. Was that, did right. I hear that correctly? I thought about that, and it wasn't just that. Steve Jobs wasn't satisfied with being the best.
Yeah.
He always found a way to make it better. Even being the best wasn't good enough for him. He's like, you know what? No. I can do more. We can do better. We can give them better than what everybody thinks is the best. And they always
there was no relaxation period or anything. Like, after the iPod or the iPhone, they didn't say, well, job well done there, so everybody take a break for a few years.
Yeah, and I think it's true. You look at, you know, look at the first iPod. I don't even think, they didn't have the 30-pin connectors back then. I mean, it was just like a FireWire 400 port on it, and it was giant and clunky. And take a look, you know, we're talking 10 years later, take a look at the current iPod lineup. It offers barely any resemblance to what the original did. And it's just...
Fuck, look at the Nano. Compare the Nano to the original.
Oh, yeah.
The Nano has, well, obviously more storage, but it's more intuitive interface, and it's smaller than the fucking button on the original. How amazing is that?
And in all honesty, there are, you know, there are companies out there that are still trying to make something as good as the first iPod. Like, granted, they can integrate better technology and whatnot into their stuff, but none of them have had a hit. None of them have had a hit like the first iPod. And, you know, every iPod after that has been just as mind-blowing.
And, dude, and that's what a lot of these companies won't get. That's one thing that I have to admit, and to just a slight side swipe here, that is starting to kind of impress me about Microsoft, that it seems like they're starting to understand this. But for the first time, but no one else seems to be catching on that the technology isn't the... I mean, from the day the... I don't know if you guys remember, but even the very first iPod, look back at the Samsung MP3 players that came out at the same time. They have always been companies putting way more juice, way more technology, just pushing the envelope beyond what Apple does. And they all seem to forget that Apple is a state of mind. You know, it's not a fucking technology. It's a state of friggin' mind. It's an attention to detail, a design ethos, a philosophy. You know, it's... Apple was... I guess the best way to put it is, say, take the best piece of software Microsoft has come up with so far. And, you know, we're talking about Windows 7, Windows Phone 7, Visual Studio. These things are elegant tools. They're well-designed things. They're you know, brilliant pieces of technology. But every single device that Apple has ever put out is a labor of love.
And I think it's... I think it's more than that, even that, you know, the Apple has always, they can just consistently go in their own direction. Where, like, thinking about it recently, you know, with the announcement of the 4S yesterday, I was reminded of, you know, all of the things that we care about right now with our phones. You know, 4G is a huge one. Everyone wants a 4G phone. You know, bigger screens are happening a lot, stuff like that. And, you know, so Apple takes a stage yesterday and starts making their announcements, and everyone's expecting, oh, you know, they might release a 4G phone, they might release this. And they totally just dismissed everything that everyone else was doing and introduced that Siri thing, which, granted, has a lot to prove before it becomes, you know, popular, I guess. But if it does work the way it's advertised, I mean, I don't know if anyone else sees it the way I do, but I think that thing is totally remarkable and really groundbreaking. That it's
it really is.
I think it's fucking creepy, but I mean, yes, groundbreaking.
It does have
as well.
A creepiness factor and maybe a bit of a Skynet.
Best new technology
going on
is
too.
Though.
But it amazes me that Apple just consistently says, "All right, you guys are doing that. You guys are all going up. Everyone wants 4G. You guys go off and do that. We're going to introduce this, and then." And if it works the way Apple wants it to, and it's successful the way a lot of Apple things end up being, I guarantee you're going to see all these other companies take a hard left and start driving the way Apple's going again and trying to make a voice system the same that they did, you know?
And that's kind of my point. You know, it's not the idea that it is everything they're building is a labor of love. It's they do what they're doing in a vacuum. Like I was discussing earlier on that, yes, from a technical standpoint, you know, this, you know, Siri doesn't really impress me because, you know, like behind closed doors, companies like Microsoft have been doing amazing things with voice. Like they're building this technology on the backs of far greater research, but that was never the point. It's that to them, this was a labor of love. They took their time to get it right. They brought it when they felt it was right, and they did it in a vacuum, completely unconcerned with what anyone else was doing. To them, their whole purpose was to make something amazing. And that's it. You know, like, forget it. Yes, occasionally, you know, Apple will come up with something that, you know, and you can tell it's a reaction to one of their competitors, but in general... Like, when was the last time we looked at Apple really produced something and we said, oh man, their back's against the wall, they're worried. No, it's always just been like, you know, like you said, you know, you guys go off in that direction and that's great, you know, but we're just going to do this, you know, and
I think it's their following that really allows them to be able to do things like that.
Yeah, oh, and that is true. Yeah, they did, but
because because people will buy it, you know, because
well, see, the thing is, though, that wasn't always the case.
Company is just strange because people have such brand loyalty to Apple. Like, it's Apple. It has affected my life, and I want more of it.
You know, I mean, more than that, I guess as the resident fanboy here, I should probably speak up to this. It's more than, like, Apple has honestly, despite the fact that I love their products and they do great things for me and they make my life a little easier, Apple has honestly earned my support. From when I got my first MacBook Pro and the littlest thing goes wrong, at one point the screen was getting a little more dim. And, you know, I'd up the brightness all the way, and it still wasn't as bright as I remember it being and as it used to be and as some of my friends had been. And I brought it into Apple, and that is like a totally frivolous problem, I guess. And I showed it to the guy, and I said, you know, the screen's getting dim. I'm kind of bummed about this. And he's like, all right, we'll replace it for you. And so they replaced it. And I came back, and they're like, yeah, you're under warranty, so it's free. Here's your computer.
Yeah, that's.
But you know, I think they have. They're a different kind of company as compared to all the other tech companies, you know, even in their same markets. They just do things a little bit differently, and I think that really helps them be able to do things a little differently and not have to be like, well, we're going to push this technology out real fast and it might break. That allows them to take the time and do different things.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the stuff they do wouldn't work for other people. By all rights, half of the shit that Apple has pulled should have caused them to fail. But because of the massive following they have, and by that I mean just completely going away from what everybody else has done. Like, if you look at any other company, nobody else does that. And there's a reason nobody else does that, because that shit's fucking dangerous. But
in the same respect,
Apple's track record. Yes, because of Apple's track record. And that's only because of Steve Jobs. Because before Steve Jobs came back, they were well and truly in the fucking shitter. It's only because of Steve Jobs that Apple is able to do what they do today.
Exactly. And it's
Did I disconnect or did everybody go quiet? Okay.
I don't know who I interrupted, but I was going to stop and let them go.
Now, I was going to say, and that's pretty much what I've been repeating over and over again. Most tech companies build products, you know, and Apple creates states of mind. Most companies, you know, produce products and Apple gives birth to them. You know, like there's a whole different, it's this, I know it's an abstract thing to really, you know, put your hands on, but that's kind of the sense I get even at the moment when they release something and I'm like, oh, come on, that's horseshit. I want nothing to do with that. The one thing you would, like, you go over every criticism I've ever thrown at Apple, you know, and you'll see one thing that I have never questioned is the amount of care and effort. You know, this is, you know, to every other company, oh, this is our new multi-billion dollar product. But to Apple, it's like, this is Steve's baby. Be gentle.
It's not only Steve's baby. It's not only his baby. It is him. It is part of him. Like, yes. Right now, I'm looking, I have in front of me my iPhone 3G, my discontinued iPhone. An iPod video from 05, my MacBook Pro, and some others, like headphones. Every single button, every single curve, line, everything, everything on any of this device was personally approved and to liking. It was, everything was his. Yeah, other people designed them, but he had the final say what this product would look like and what it would act like and what it would be and what it would represent.
True story and funny little detail that a lot of people don't know. Steve Jobs hated the name iMac, and he never actually signed off on it.
Yeah, I think it's been basically said that he hates all of the I names, but it's just become such a household name now that they can't really stray away from it.
Yeah, really. I remember they listed, like, I saw somewhere reading a list of the names he proposed, and I remember thinking, oh, dear God.
And they were all horrible.
Yeah. I'm glad they went with the iMac.
Yeah, that, dude, talk about serendipity. Like, it just changed the whole term. I mean, the only other comparison I can think of in a brand kind of taking, you know, the social zeitgeist are two brands specifically. Coca-Cola turning Santa Claus from green or black clothing to red, you know, and Google becoming a verb. Like, beyond that, like, the whole I thing, as annoying as it's become, like, honestly, you don't become annoying without becoming overused first.
And another thing that it proves is because he never actually signed off on it, because he never approved it, and because he hated it so much, that just proves how fucking pig-headed that man was to the very end. He never approved it, and even though everyone loved it, he never fucking admitted that it was a good idea. Never.
So I had to step away for a second, so I'm not sure if you guys mentioned this, but when Agrippa was talking about Apple, like, kind of leading the way, like, that is one of the things that Steve Jobs, first off, I'm not really sure where the Apple following came from, to be honest. For most of Apple's life, Mac computers were a niche product, you know, very few people had them, they were an isolated ecosystem. The iPod had to add Windows compatibility just to take off because when they were tied to Macs, it didn't work. But
yeah.
What's that?
Oh, no, I was just agreeing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But the thing that, like, especially Steve Jobs, because that period where he wasn't there, they didn't have this ability, but, like, it's not just Steve or Apple's ability to understand or to have great ideas and put care into them, but to make people believe it, to make people latch on to their ideas, not just like people not Apple, but even inside Apple. You've got to think, for something like the iPhone to come together, as much as Steve has an influence on that, that's not just Steve. That's Steve approving a lot of things, but that is tons of people, like, what's it, the 90 hours a week and loving it, or whatever that shirt was they came up with in the 80s or 90s or whatever. You know, Steve and Apple are great at convincing people to put in the same amount of effort and passion that Steve himself had. I mean, even right now, we wouldn't be having this podcast or this meeting for anyone else that died. You know, this,
I would for Bill Gates.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that because, well, I don't want to eulogize him, but
yeah, I know. Like, yeah,
he's a class act, but that's all I'm going to say right now.
Yeah.
But no, it's like, it's the ability to convince people, users. The iPod was their biggest hit up until the iPhone. Macs were fantastic, but they still kind of stayed in their little bubble. But when the iPhone came out, there was no reason to think that a touchscreen phone that cost, what was it, $500 or $600?
$600, yeah.
Yeah, there was no reason to think that that was going to be a success. And I think even Gizmodo, for all their Apple love, thought, like, said to pass on the first iPhone. But they convinced people that it was a great idea, and, like, they can do that because in a lot of ways they're right. Like, everyone knows I'm not a huge fan of Apple products. Some of them, but mostly not really. But, you know, they're still good. They're still good products.
I owned a 3G and a 3GS, and I loved both of them. Right up until the end of my 3GS, when it became apparent that I was never going to be able to do the things that I wanted to do with my phone. But initially, I loved them. And the biggest complaint that I had about my iPhones was AT&T.
Yeah.
You know, Eric, on part of the reason, like, and I think I can, I'm no sociologist, you know, but I think I have a slight understanding as to where that passion, that original following came from. You know, if you think about it, the answer is right there in the fact that, you know, Apple products have always been or had always been, you know, niche products. But, you know, rather than appealing to specific types of freaks, think about the types of people, the niche that it actually appealed to. These were extremely passionate, extremely creative, artistic types. The type of people who, for example, Kaiser hasn't done anything in his life that specifically would make me feel like lesser of a man next to him. And yet, every time he does one of his little sketches in like 5 minutes, you know, and it blows your friggin' mind, you know, you're in awe of his talent. And that's exactly the kind of person that was pulled in. It was people like Kaiser, people like Ron, you know, people like, you know, people like Sam Spratt. You know, it's like these types of people who are just like, you know, you see what they do and it's like magic to you and you want to be like that.
Please and don't. So, don't call what I do magic.
It's not, but you get what I'm saying, right? It's like, it's a whole, like there's this myth. And of course, you know, most of it is an illusion, you know, like these are just people who do stuff and enjoy what they're doing and they do it better than you. I know some people consider my writing to be like the way some people talk to me about my writing is as if it's magic. And to me, it's like, it's in my sleep. I don't even edit my work anymore. You know, it's nothing to me. But then every once in a while I talk to someone who acts like, you know, I just, you know, I don't know, you know, like I just blew their mind. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, and I understand, like, when I talk to Kaiser, I see that same thing in him. I'm, like, practically worshiping his hands. And he's just like, I don't know, I just felt like sketching. And these are the types of, you know, the types of people who formed that initial cabal, that initial kind of inner cult, if you will, the high priest, and everyone else, to everyone else outside, it looked like magic.
Yeah.
And when you had the opportunity to kind of, to look like them, to be like them, you know, it starts, I know we make fun of hipsters, but that's always kind of been the funny thing about hipsters. <You know? laughs> No, I mean, seriously, like that, if you think about it, that's always kind of been the funny thing about hipsters. Like, you know, we laugh at them, but at the same time, they're always so, you know, avant-garde about doing. Like, everything they're doing seems so fucking important. You're like, well, shit, I wish I was that full of myself. You know, it's just, I honestly think that was a kind of infectious thing. Like, what was it? Oh, yeah, when the first iPhone came out. And after, you know, like you said, you know, no one expected it to sell so well. But when it did, people explained it because they understood that it was aspirational. Apple products were aspirational. Buying an Apple product was like buying a Benz. It was like buying a Ferrari. It was to show that you'd made it. And people wanted to make it. You know,
and
I don't know how big Apple would have to get before it loses that kind of shine. I don't know that it'll ever lose that kind of shine.
I don't think until there's a changing of the guard of a huge nature, not just, you know, Steve Jobs out, Tim Cook in, but I mean, you'd have to have a mass exodus of the talent that's at Apple right now for that kind of a change to happen. Because, I mean, this isn't like another a company. I mean, I disagree with some things Apple does, but you've got to admit, you know, they run on a principle of we're going to put love and passion into everything we do. We're only going to do it for a few really awesome things, and we're not going to stop until it takes over the world.
But that's also the thing to me, and I know that it's always been a question of what will Apple be like after Steve Jobs? And will it work? Will it fail? What will happen? And I think, you know, early Apple before today and before Steve Jobs was initially removed was somewhat of an unknown. There wasn't really, you know, they had their major innovations with the Apple II and stuff like that, but it was still kind of getting its feet on the ground, I guess, getting itself in motion. And then once Steve came back, they defined themselves in a way that, like, we don't just make things to sell them. We pour everything we have into everything we make, and we make them to make people happy, not for the almighty dollar at the end of the day. And so now, you know, now that Steve Jobs is gone and the company will obviously be moving forward, I feel like it's only going to attract people who agree with that principle, who say, I have a passion for creating and trying to make things that will make people happy. I don't think it'll attract people that are just looking for, you know, for money or whatever.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. Have you guys seen like this quote that's being passed around from a Wall Street Journal interview? Being the richest man in the cemetery doesn't matter to me. Going to bed at night saying we've done something wonderful—that's what matters. Like, I mean,
was that from Steve himself?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Apparently, May 25th, 1993, Wall Street Journal. But I mean, that's it right there. That's the Apple Doctrine. Whoa! I am writing that book, The Apple Doctrine. But
another Noisecast money making idea.
Seriously, I mean that's pretty much what it boils down to. And personally, you know what I think the greatest thing that could happen, and I know some people are going to hate to hear this. If 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, Apple isn't relevant, Apple reaches its half-life, you know, not many companies get to be like IBM, you know, and, you know, over 100 years old. You know, like if they die, that doesn't bother me. What really kind of excites me right now in the house that Steve built, there are all these people, executives, artists, you know, even some of them may not have even been in Apple for very long. It's just, you know, they were brought up in that ethos. They came to this company and they absorbed some of this. And all these people scattering to start their own companies, to run for office, to, you know, to teach and build and whatnot. It's like, you know, in the early days, like, I mean, remember in the early days when, you know, Microsoft started just like, was printing a new millionaire every week. And these people went off and started investing in stuff. And right now Google's doing that, you know, where some of the best, you know, angel investors and whatnot are former Googlers or current Googlers. And it's like, you know, seeding this technology. Like, I want to see that happen with Apple, to have that, like, the seed just spread out there. Because you've already seen a lot of, you know, long-time, Apple devotees who, you know, like they used to work there, former, you know, evangelists and whatnot, who have gone off and, you know, joined other companies and done other stuff. And it's like just laying the groundwork all over the place. I want to see more of that happen, you know. And I think if we have, I mean, right now we have one Apple, just one Apple. That's it. With this ethos that has changed the entire game. Imagine having 10 of them, or 100 of them, or 1,000 of them. Yes, not any one would be able to stand out quite the way Apple has, but imagine that kind of care going into every device, every piece of software, every whatever. You know, like, everyone's talking about this whole revolution in the way businesses are run, the Facebook revolution, you know, where it's now trendy to, you know, casual Fridays is now being turned into casual week, you know, office chairs being replaced with beanbags. Like, they're like, all these companies are adopting these completely meaningless, you know, traditions here and there. But that one quote by Steve Jobs, you know, this idea of making beautiful things,
That's what they need to be adopting. And just imagine if every company that you dealt with put that kind of care. Like, I don't care. I know, like, a microwave might seem like a reasonably meaningless thing, but imagine a microwave designed with the Apple ethos. Yeah, or, you know, cars.
I think that's the biggest thing to me, and what kind of pulls me towards Apple, is that it's very apparent with Apple that it's the doctrine of, like, if we make something amazing and we put everything we have into it, the money will come and we'll be able to sustain ourselves and run a reasonable company here and do a good job at it. Where I think a lot of other people, or not a lot of other people, a lot of other companies kind of reverse that and just say, you know, let's make whatever we can to make as much money as we can and put the cheapest of all parts in it and charge the most we possibly can for it so that, you know, we profits soar and we look great to stock investors and such. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. I think it's something that takes a following like what Apple has in order to say, we are going to take our time with everything. We are going to pour everything we have into it. And in the end, you will like it, but you have to trust us with this kind of stuff. You know, not every company can do that.
Yeah, especially love, like, the way Apple has managed to, like, they don't just, you know, push the envelope in terms of, you know, what the products they make can be, but they push the envelope in terms of how they can make their money, which is part of what makes them a successful business. And occasionally we forget they're a business, but, you know, Apple, you think about it, before 2007, Apple had to come to a board of directors and say, okay, I know right now everyone uses phones with little crappy cameras and they send text messages. What we want to do is we want to take this really amazing touchscreen and we want to put a bunch of apps on it and we want to give it a glass screen and this nice aluminum back and we want to sell it for $600. And, you know, somebody had to look at that and go, that's ridiculous. And this is for consumers. Like, that's the same thing that they told them when they brought them the PC, you know, the you know, computers for people, is this is ridiculous. A lot of the ideas they come up with are ridiculous, but Apple knows how to make business people uncomfortable. And I love that about them because I hate business people. I hate the people who make their product just to make money.
Right.
And Apple makes those people uncomfortable and then is better at their jobs. Like, people who go to Harvard Business School suck at making money compared to Apple, whose CEO dropped out of a college in Portland.
Yeah, because I think if you look at a business like a bottom line and a profit projection and, you know, stock quotes and margins and all this Excel spreadsheet crap, you know, you're looking at it the wrong way. You need to look at the heart of your business and what you are doing to enrich people's lives, because at the end of the day, that's the point of being a business. You're there to sell whatever it is to make the people you're selling it to make their lives better.
Yeah, and that's a simple principle that should be applied to everything. But so many folks get caught up on the making money aspect of a business that they forget people don't want to give you money if you're not making their lives better.
True. Too true.
I think we've strayed a little bit away from the original purpose, which was to talk about Steve and his legacy and the things that, the ways that he's changed our life. I mean, we're kind of there now, but
I feel
most
like
of
Apple
it's,
is Steve in a lot of ways.
Yeah, to an extent, like, yes, it is.
And I feel like this wouldn't be the Noisecast if we didn't stray off topic a lot anyway.
This is very true. But I think that we'd be better served if we held on to at least a little bit of this for the actual episode later in the week.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Sure.
Anybody ever play Number Munchers or Word Munchers?
Steven, try to focus.
What is this, WTF?
No!
He's been quiet this whole time just so he could say that one thing. He's like, man, I'm waiting for an opening so I can put in this Number Crunchers.
Nah, hey, Ron, you just edit in the WTF, you know, music and it'll be the WTF Steve news.
No, Word Munchers or Number Munchers. It was the earliest, or one of the earliest memories I had with Apple, and before that it was Odell Down Under.
Odell Down Under.
Thank you. I'm not crazy.
Oh,
see?
Man. What a game.
And the
wait,
one...
you've got Gonzo agreeing with you. That's not really.
You didn't play Odell Down Under.
There, buddy.
A problem.
See, Steven, if you weren't crazy, you would have said Oregon Trail.
Oh, I was getting to that. That's a little bit further down.
Sure, you were.
Not Oregon Trail 2, just original. But and there before that, there was this one little game where you had a sort of satellite that you had to put in a number and it landed it on the moon somewhere and you had to land on a flat surface or something.
I remember that game.
Yeah. And
yeah, I remember that.
And even more in the future, programs like Kid Pix or HyperCard. Well, okay. Before I knew Windows...
Bring it
before,
back to Steve now.
before I knew Windows, before I knew IBM and all that stuff, I was from the age of, I think, 3. It was Mac, and it was those sort of computers with, and you had the old Windows machines, not the Windows, but they were IBM machines, with the giant black screen with the orange letters that were just DOS and nothing else. And you had these like crappy old Macs that, tell they were one of Steve's first sort of ideas, and they just looked so different and so radically out there. Compared to these other ancient things, that even back then, even though they didn't do much, they still showed the direction and the ideas that Steve had when people were still doing the typical orange letters, black screen, large clunky keyboard. Sharing my earliest memories of Steve's impact on me.
How many times has everyone here gotten dysentery in Oregon Trail?
Every fucking time.
I think everyone does.
I never actually. I always die somewhere in Utah.
Well, I made it, and it's really great when you get to the end. You feel so relieved.
And Oregon Trail 2 introduced like shorter, you know, places. If you were big of a bitch to go to Oregon, you could go to Utah. You could go to Springfield.
Yeah. Oregon Trail was updated with HD graphics and released on iOS. I had it on my iPhone and I played it. I never got dysentery. I did, however, have to worry about every single one of my family members ending up with a broken bone. And at several points during the trip, a fucking eagle flew off with my daughter. I don't know how that happened.
An eagle?
Yeah. It just swooped down onto the caravan, snagged the kid, and flew off. And then that'll I lose happen. A week waiting for the kid to wander back. I don't know how she found her way back, but that must have been one fucking source
from an eagle. Landed on her feet. All right, I guess I'll walk back.
Oh yeah, I can see the dust from the caravan over there. But yeah, it still had the bison things come through, and you had to shoot the animals and collect the meat, and I mean, it had all that fun stuff.
That game taught you how to be excessive in everything. I'm going to Oregon. How many bills do you need? 500,000. How much food do you need? Pounds. Fuck
you
that.
You don't need any food. You shoot it.
Exactly. And then you go out and you shoot like 800 pounds worth of meat and you can only carry back 25.
Yeah, what a waste.
Meat.
And then sometimes you go out and you end up shooting like 5 squirrels and that's it.
Pappy dies.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow we were supposed to bring this back to Steve Jobs, but...
We just went further off topic.
What we do.
But I don't know. I think we've had a good discussion on it. I think going on for an hour about this. More.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been quite a while.
I think it's very fitting to... As a sort of a tribute, because we... We all feel very deeply about him, and we all feel very deeply about what he brought to the world, how he changed it. Listening to you guys talk, I've been silent this whole time. Just listening to your revelations and how you felt and everything, how you perceive things, I think that's more important to know, to hear, than how you felt when you found out when Jobs died, in my personal opinion. I think it shows a lot more.
Dude, before we started recording, when it was just me, Eric, and Ron in here, Eric was like, "So, how you guys doing?" Ron's like, "Not too good." And I started talking, and then I had to stop because it was I was crying like a little girl.
Well.
And I know this is going to come around later, and you guys are going to be like, "Oh, but you're crying about Steve Jobs." And I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to preempt that and say, "Fuck
you're
going to
fucking
all.
Go to all of them."
This week in fuck you becomes this week in Vito crying.
I need it under his pasta buffet.
Hey, just as long as just as long as we don't become posers and all of a sudden just. You know, love Apple for the sake of loving Apple.
Oh, I'm still not getting iPhone 4S.
I'll be right back to cussing everybody out tomorrow. Don't worry.
Because that's the only thing that'll piss me off if I start seeing people. You know, say it's the same thing, but like you know, when Amy Winehouse died, and all of a sudden she had twice as many fans as she originally did, and you're like, where the fuck were you people?
Well, you don't have to worry about that for me. Throw that one out there.
Nah, it. Whoa, I heard a voice. Oh,
I think that might be Alberto.
Alberto is
Alberto
here.
Has
dead,
arrived.
Dead people? No.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What up, Alberto?
Not much.
Yeah, you came in right at the end.
Oh, Dag.
How you doing?
Well, I fought traffic to try to get here on time. Didn't work out.
Did you fight it with a sword? Was it like a dragon?
Yeah, something like that.
New York traffic? Close to it. Close enough.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather go up against a fucking dragon, to be honest with you.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I'm pretty sure there's an app, a traffic app you could have used.
I'm pretty sure that it would have been red all over.
NYC is just a big red fucking dot.
If you're on AT&T, you might as well just be using smoke signals.
But yeah, that since Alberto's here, we should at least give him time to. I mean, we've all had a chance to say our piece, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone pretty much, especially in the tech community, has said nothing but good things about Steve Jobs and. Honestly, you know, he's a big reason of why I even am interested in the way I am. So, you know, definitely wish his family and those that he was close to the best and, you know, just a little peace of mind in this time, you know. It's always a tough time no matter what. So,
you know, there are a couple of things that are bothering me right now, and these seem like, I mean, they're really small things and kind of weird that this is like sticking in my head, but well, this one isn't weird, this one's just an annoyance, and that's stupid commenters on different websites, like the stupid shit they're starting arguments over, you know, blah blah blah, the, you know, things wouldn't have been where they are with smartphones and something. No, Apple didn't do this and their stuff sucks, and it's like, is that really the point? Like, is this the place to have this discussion? Or, you know, the obvious trolls coming in, you know, like whatever.
See,
so that's annoying. Yeah.
That's the difference, you know, between a fan and a fanboy. A fan, like me, or like any one of us, can look objectively and say, yes, I don't really enjoy the products. I don't buy into the ethos or the whole, oh my God, I love Apple. But we can look at it and say everything that this man did affected us in some way. without bringing arguments into it, without hyperbole or any of that shit, without starting an argument, we can say that. Now, there are people that are just completely irrational about shit, and no matter what, they will never, ever be able to have a civil conversation about something like this. And I do my best to ignore those people, because it's impossible to talk to them.
Exactly. Though, quite frankly, I don't even want to bother going into the comment sections on any tech website right now. It doesn't even matter. There's always going to be one asshole that says, oh, but, you know, he ripped off Xerox for the graphical UI. It's just like, you know what? Really, it's not the time. And if that's all you can get from this whole thing, keep it to yourself.
Nah.
That's what I do.
The other thing that's kind of bugging me, and this is the weird thing, you know how many years he'd been trying to get permission to tear down the house and build something better in its place?
Oh, forever.
It's really bothering me that he's not going to get to see it. Like, it genuinely bugs me that he finally got it torn down, and he's, like, I have no idea why that little thing's just sticking, but, you know, it just goes to show, even if you're on top of the world, there's always going to be that one thing.
Oh, yeah. You know? Definitely. It's like unfinished business, you know? Everybody always has that one thing that they wish they could have done, you know, sooner, or see done, you know, all the way through, but... You know, unfortunately.
Well, look at it this way. At least, if nothing else, he got to see the release of the best fucking phone yet. He was around long enough for that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, man. He got to see... He got to hear all the shit said about him, and he got to be vindicated with a vengeance. I mean... I'm a full believer in luck, that people underestimate luck and overestimate their own skill. And Steve Jobs is a very lucky man, but that doesn't change how amazing, you know, his situation, his life, his story is. I mean that is how, you know, luck is a double-edged sword. At the end of the day, if it wasn't him, it would have been someone else, but it was him. You know, that's the point. It was him. And that's one hell of a story, man. Like, I'll tell you this. I have no interest in getting the iPhone 4S. I have no interest in any iPhone or a MacBook. Maybe an iPad, but I'm kind of happy with my Iconia. You know, I have no real interest in any of that stuff. But his autobiography? Yeah, I'm on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, there are certain things that, you know, just stick out, you know, and for to have him tell his story, that's definitely a must read.
This is kind of a stupid question. Autobiography is the one you write of yourself, right? So then that book is a biography. Yeah, that book is not an autobiography; it's a biography.
Yeah. Is that the official biography? The one
he greenlit.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's still, I mean, it's going to be the only one of its kind.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely worth picking up.
Anyone up for watching Pirates of Silicon Valley?
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, definitely.
let's do a live blog it. Let's all get shit-faced and live-blog it, and that'll be our send-off.
That sounds good.
Stole it, Steve! You stole it!
Fuck Steve Jobs stealing shit! Fucking can't even have his own idea. That totally fucking Xerox, man.
I'm serious, dude. We should do it. Or hey, you know what? We've been wanting to go into something video related. We should do
a Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, you know.
We'll do it with the Xbox avatars, where you can watch it in a theater.
Oh yeah. Man, and I don't have my Xbox.
Ah, that's it.
Can it work with a PS3?
No.
What kind of dumbass question is that?
That's, come on, dude.
Renaissance.
We expect better from our editor-in-chief, dude.
Yeah, you're on thin ice.
On a side note, the Steve Jobs, the tweet that announced his death is right now currently the fifth most, or it's on its way to becoming the fifth most upvoted Reddit link of all time. It's approaching 7,900 upvotes. So, just a side note.
Yeah, and whoever fucking submitted that thing is jizzing himself over all the karma. He doesn't even give a fuck about the fact that Steve is dead or any of that. He's like, oh my god, karma! That's just how Reddit works.
That's Stanley Hudson.
That's the sound of Reddit.
Stanley, we should call him on the podcast and be like, how does it feel to be the man who broke the news on Reddit?
Look at all that karma.
You go down in history.
Hey.
Sorry, I just... some things about Reddit are really awesome, but most of it just irritates the fuck out of me. Why did everybody get so quiet?
We've run out of steam here.
We've run out of steam?
I don't think we've run out of steam. I think this is... this is exactly the kind of... Like, when I came on here, I was a little bit bothered this was going to be just eulogy after eulogy. I kind of prefer this, where it's like, you know, just good time. This is how I've had a few friends die under different circumstances, and this is kind of how we always did it. Like, the rest of us just got around with beers, or whoever the designated driver was, had soda, and, you know...
How responsible.
Everybody was getting shit.
And, you know, yeah,
or
just
more
kinda...
soda than everyone else. Less beers.
We've actually even gotten positive feedback for how we handled the article as well. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, like, people, I've heard some people say, like, Bazooka Fox and stuff, they said that they really like how we did ours, as opposed to, he's dead!
Suck it, Gizmodo. Sorry.
Pretty much.
Did I say that out loud?
Oops.
Okay.
Oops.
and then we look at the money that Gizmodo got from their ads, and we go, okay.
Oh, man.
Hey, you want to know what stings? That Gawker's page views or visits are... just 7 million shy of what they were before the redesign. And that's 7 million out of 600. So,
yeah. Hey, Vito, look, like Steve Jobs said, being the richest man in the cemetery doesn't matter to me. Going to bed at night, say we've done something wonderful. All right,
King Tut disagrees with you.
So, that wasn't even his money. That club-footed bastard.
Man, he fucking inherited that shit.
He really just fucking... called King Tut a club-footed bastard.
Yeah, fuck you, King Tut. What? He's an old Egyptian bastard.
This is it right here. Classic noise cast, ladies and gentlemen.
This is what happens when we do a show with no topic list.
Well, hey, remember back when we were relegated to iTunes hell? Or at least, I think secretly hoping we would be, because it would mean that they noticed us.
I love that this whole thing started off with Ron talking about how Apple and Steve Jobs changed his life, and now it's going to end with, fuck you, King Tut!
You club-footed bastard.
Just to bring it back to what Vito said earlier about Gizmodo making money off all their ads, we made... $3.47 today. So, round of applause, gentlemen.
Cha-ching!
All right.
Well done. Well done.
I think
we
can get
around.
On a bus. One of us, anyway.
The tallest, the largest city starts with a brick. Boys, just remember that.
Nice. I've already forgotten it though. But no. Okay,
I just said remember that. Fuck,
dude. Like, but you were talking.
Oh. Yeah.
So, you know.
I'm sorry, I've had a few. So, if I'm not making any sense, I'm going to blame it on dogfish.
Blame it on the alcohol.
Blame it on the alcohol. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we should cut the recording here if we're all done.
I'm not
done. I think we're good.
I'm really not done.
Well, I definitely think we should...
Are you finished? Because that's the proper grammatical way to say it.
No, I mean, seriously, I'm kind of happy that we ended this with some giggles, with some laughs, without being disrespectful to anyone but King Tut.
And ourselves. That's the way that it should be. Have you guys ever heard of a jazz funeral? You know what that is?
No. Is that a funeral where they play jazz?
All right. In my childhood, I lived in New Orleans for a time because my grandmother's side of the family is from Louisiana. And a jazz funeral, they basically get a jazz band. And what they'll do is they start at the funeral home, obviously, and they play music, sad, somber music, basically mourning the death of the person that's there. Halfway there, they switch over and they start playing jazz music, and they're happy and they're upbeat, and that is to celebrate the life of the person that they're escorting, because that's what really should happen. I mean, yes, you should be sad, and it's terrible that we lost a titan today, but instead of crying and weeping and mourning all the time, we need to celebrate all of the great things that he gave us and all the great things that he left at Apple that we haven't even seen yet. And I kind of think that's what we're doing. We started off kind of sad, and now we're ending on a high note with some laughs and some jokes.
In honor of Steve, I made sure to park in the handicap zone, saying that I was a chairperson.
I took the license plate off my car.
There you go.
I'm just happy that we
put a barcode on my truck tomorrow.
I'm happy that our ways of dealing with death we're going from sad to happy and all that stuff. We're doing different ways. I'm not sure if we want to incorporate the other cultures as well. You're more than welcome to, except the one where you eat your dead.
Yeah.
Right. I think Gob's family would take issue with a bunch of people that spent like the first 20 episodes of their podcast saying "fuck Steve Jobs, fuck Apple." And they might.
Now let's eat his flesh.
Give us your power, Steve.
King Tut was just 5,000 years behind in technology.
Dude, I'm this casual Friday. Fucking turtleneck jeans, and I'm going to eat apples till I'm sick.
That's weird.
Yeah, dude, it is. But you know what's, the place I work, the funny thing is, the place I work at right now, our biggest client is Microsoft. Everyone except maybe me and a handful of other people use iPhones, Macs, iPads, whatever. It's just like...
You don't use any of that stuff.
It's a Windows world with friggin' Apple Windows. You know what I mean? I don't know if that even makes sense.
Windows world with Apple Windows?
Yeah. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
no.
It's like the entire world is built on Windows and Linux, but every time you look out the window to kind of daydream, it's like you're kind of looking at an imaginary world that Apple built. That's the way I always see it. It's like when I need to get to work, I'm on a Microsoft device or some kind of Linux based device. But when I think of Apple, it's the same kind of whimsy as when I'm daydreaming or when I'm whatever. And I know a lot of people do serious work with Apple. Don't get me. That's not what I'm trying to say. It feels like the neighbor with a BMW you can't afford.
I think her grip has had more than I have.
I was half expecting like a Rule 34 to come out of this.
Yeah, no, I was going somewhere very different and realized that I don't think we're ready for that. So I was kind of readjusting on the fly.
Yeah, I think I hear what he's trying to say, but he's a much better at writing than he is at speaking. Let's put it that way.
Did you just call me black?
I'm kidding. I'm not racist. I know black people. I mean, I have black friends. Which one is it? Does it make me a bad person?
Neither.
I bet you even let him use your bathroom, don't you?
Not number two. I'm sorry. That's going too far.
All right. Oh. I'm finished.
And this
now.
Was the Noisecast.
Yeah.
Hey, well, does Steve Jobs' Apple have a theme song? I mean, well, not like an official one, but like a song or something that.
Like an
Steve
Apple
Jobs
March.
Of Apple Company.
No, I had. Are you talking about trying to intro this?
No, Apple. I'm sorry, I am high as fuck right now.
What the hell?
No,
whatever the hell you have, we need to share.
No, I'm not literally high, but damn. I'm so sleep deprived.
I will have
no
what
idea.
He's having.
All right, Steven, you need
to try not sleeping.
Okay,
I think we need to do an outro roll call. Real
yeah.
Quick.
Okay.
Before this gets worse.
Yeah, Eric Ravenscraft was on here earlier. He had to go, but thank you to Eric. Agrippa. He's not sober anymore, but Agrippa's here.
The reincarnation of King Tut, just so you know.
Alberto's also on the show.
Chairperson extraordinaire.
Gonzo Ryder.
Yeah.
Ron Taraj.
Good night.
And Vito.
Thank you, Steve Jobs, for making all of this possible.
Donald Steven Kills. And
hey,
yes?
Before you go... that is all. Continue.
Agrippa is so obviously new to doing the podcast with us.
No, I'm sorry. I just wanted to derail him. I just wanted to derail him one last time.
Okay. I think this is a good way to end this podcast to show that we went from sad to being happy because we went through, I don't know, whatever.
The
emotional.
We went through
the
all the state of grief in this podcast.
Right, right. So thank you, Steve Jobs. May you rest in peace. You will always live on in the hearts and in the lives of us and of generations to come. So... tune in
awesome.
Next time, same time, same place, from your special spot in the iCloud for the Noisecast.